Listening to Radio 4 FM, where we continue with our book of the week, Reaching Down the Rabbit Hole, Dr. Alan Ropper's stories from life on the neurological ward. Sometimes a patient's symptoms aren't always what they seem.
Greta B. is a 38-year-old woman, about 5 foot 5 inches, well-dressed, a bit overweight. She was referred by a neurologist north of Boston for an unknown type of walking disorder, and has come in with her husband, who is more distraught than she is. Hello, thank you for waiting. I'm Dr. Alan Ropper. I'm at your service. Doctor, you are our last resort. My wife just can't function like this. It's been a nightmare. Okay, tell me how it started. Oh, it's been going on for a very long time, and it's getting worse. How long? What do you think, honey? Maybe 6 months?
Oh, longer than that, she replies. It's just that it's gotten so much worse, and I'm falling all the time, doctor. You got to do something to help me.
Did it start suddenly?
Well, sort of, but sort of not, she says. Because at first I caught my toe on the edge of the carpet, and then I began to notice that my legs were buckling going upstairs. That was mainly on the left side, right? And now I can't even walk down the street or get in and out of a car, because as soon as I start, my knees buckle.
Okay, let me see you get out of the chair without using your hands. She puts her arms out in front of her and starts to stand up from the chair, slowly and laboriously. Midway through, with her hips and knees bent, she pauses, as if starting a dive off a diving board. She then walks forward in duck step, bent at the hips and knees. When she gets to the door frame, she grabs both door jambs, pulls herself to an erect position, and starts to walk down the hall. About every fifth step, her knees suddenly buckle, and she almost falls, like Charlie Chaplin tripping into the sunset, but recovers every time and starts walking again. It puts me in mind of how hard it was as a kid, attempting the Cossack dance with my cousins at weddings and bar mitzvahs. Not only does it take a tremendous amount of power and balance to do what she is doing, but it must engage the frontal lobes, cerebellum, basal ganglia, and all levels of her spinal cord. With me in tow, she's doing her own entire neurological examination, and it is super normal. The effort required to take her by the arm and help her down the hall, and then back to the chair, what with the dips and whirls I have to do to keep up with her, wears me out. You've just passed the physical, and you're now cleared for the Olympic pentathlon. That's what I want to tell her. Instead, I just say, I think you're going to be okay. The majority of hysterical symptoms, symptoms that have no basis in disease and are subject to suggestibility, look like real neurological diseases. Symptoms are what a patient reports. Signs are what a physician sees in an examination. Symptoms are thus subjective, and signs objective. When a patient reports a symptom, we have to take it at face value: a headache, dizziness, numbness, lower back pain. We have no tests for such things, and accept them as real, until something in the patient's behavior gives the game away. The claim of blindness, on the other hand, can be tested. People follow the image of their own eyes in a mirror. Not only that, most will involuntarily glance at a $100 bill. An old-school neurologist tested this effect. What denomination will get a blind hysteric to follow the bill? A $1 bill doesn't work. A $100 bill works almost all of the time. So he always carried one in his wallet just for that purpose. Lucinda H. is a Latina female in her late teens, with short-cropped and spiky hair. She is half sitting on the edge of an emergency department trolley, with her elbows propping her up. Healed slash marks on her wrists stand out against her dark skin. Her mother lurks at the bedside.
Doctor, she can't see. Oh my God, she's blind.
That's the first red flag. Why is her mother speaking for her? And why is the girl so calm?
When did it start, I say?
When I came over this morning to pick up the baby. She told me she couldn't see.
It would be good if I could hear what happened from Lucinda. How about it, Lucinda? What exactly happened?
I don't know. I'm blind. Isn't that enough?
I know it must be frustrating to tell your story over and over to every doctor who comes in, but it's important that I hear the details so that we can get your vision back.
I can't see anything. How would you feel if you were blind? Tell me that, okay? It's like I'm blind.
Are you blind in both eyes, I say?
That's what being blind means, doesn't it?
What were you doing when it started?
Nothing.
Can you see my hand in front of your face?
Nope.
Okay. Let me hold your arm and get you up to see how you walk. I ease her off the trolley, and her feet hit the ground naturally. Without being asked, she makes a left turn and heads for the wall and bumps into it at full stride, but manages to stick her belly out just before hitting, so that neither her head nor knees make any contact. Even before this, I was thinking, oh boy. Now I'm thinking, oy vey. I help her back onto the trolley. Let's try some other tests. Follow my finger. She stares blankly ahead as I move my finger back and forth. I pull a small mirror out of my bag and move it from left to right in front of her face about a foot away. Her eyes follow their own images in the mirror. You know, I say to her, I think you can see, but for some reason, maybe one you don't want to talk about now, you are just upset or distracted and are shutting down your vision.
Well, you're the crazy one, so screw you.
Oy vey, indeed. I'm not saying you're crazy, just that something is bothering your brain in a way that is beyond your control. Her mother blurts out,
So what are you going to do about it? I can't take her home like this.
Hands are waving all over the room as the mother begins to pace alongside the stretcher, invoking the gods and prophets at a high pitch. The temperature seems to be rising. I need to leave for a few minutes to cool off. That's the extent of my plan. Jessica M. is a 29-year-old right-handed woman who was taken by ambulance from her workplace downtown, unable to move her left side. She's about 5'4" tall, blonde, with dark roots, wears business dress and well-applied makeup. Her right arm is tucked through the handles of her sizable pocketbook. I'm so sorry this has happened to you, I say. Can you tell me how it started?
Well, I was coming out of the bathroom and ran into my co-worker, Nancy. We talked about going out tonight, and I told her I couldn't because I had promised to visit my two aunts who had come to town to see my mother.
Yes, but how did the problem with the left side begin?
Oh, I reached down to pick up my pocketbook, and my arm felt sort of weak, so I asked Nancy to help me sit down on the swivel chair near her desk. Then I felt sort of weak all over, and she told her supervisor to call 911 because she didn't like the way I looked.
Okay, so your weakness began then.
When the paramedics came, they told me to grab onto their arm to help me onto the stretcher, but I couldn't grab anything with my left arm.
What about your leg?
When we got here, I noticed that I couldn't stand on it.
The senior resident interrupts. Dr. Ropper, let's get her going for the CT scan so we can start her TPA. He's referring to a powerful clot-busting drug given to stroke victims. Because it is a blood thinner, it poses a serious risk of hemorrhage. Give me just another minute, I say, and I might save us a few hours. Show me how you raise your right arm in the air. Good. Now your right leg. Very good. And you can't move your left leg at all?
No.
As she lay on her back, I put my hand under her right heel. Now push your heel down into the bed really hard.
Terrific.
I move to the other side of the bed, and with my hand now under her left heel, I ask her to try to lift up her right leg while I try to resist. When she does this, I can feel downward pressure in her left heel. In order for anyone to lift one leg up, they have to begin by pushing the other leg down by way of bracing. This is called Hoover's sign. She is using her left leg without realizing it. I explain this physiological fact to Jessica, but before I can finish, She exclaims that she feels her left side getting stronger. I tell the residents not to bother with a CT scan. In many cases of hysteria, the ideal treatment would be hypnosis. We used it when I was a resident, and it worked, just as it worked for Sigmund Freud and his teacher, the French neurologist Jean-Martin Charcot, over a century ago. It worked because patients with hysterical symptoms are suggestible. And having fooled themselves into the symptoms, they can be fooled out of them. But in the age of informed consent, we are not allowed to fool patients about anything, even if it is the only way we can help them. Victor P. is a 27-year-old Russian emigre, an on-and-off student, and peripatetic barfly. He has been seen in the emergency department by the neuroconsult team and is still there, awaiting a diagnosis. At 7:30 a.m., I call the residents to order at morning report. What have we got? Victor, Hannah says. He's been in the emergency room since about 5 a.m. when the paramedics brought him in from his apartment down on Huntington Avenue. His roommate said he was having weird movements and foaming at the mouth. Just now when I left, he was shaking all over with wild rhythmic movements that had lasted for about 45 minutes. We've already tried Valium IV, 2 mg, Dilantin IV, up to a gram, and they're breaking out the Versed. Hold it, I say. That's pretty potent stuff. What makes you think that 45 continuous minutes of shaking and shimmying has to be a seizure? Did he bite his tongue? No. Was he incontinent? No. Look, seizures stop themselves after a couple of minutes. The cells exhaust themselves and use up all the ATP, so it's almost impossible to convulse for this long without stopping and starting again. Is his back arched? Yes. Elliot, seated to my right at the conference table, suddenly stands up and walks out of the room without a word. He returns almost immediately with a rubber stamp in his right hand, reaches over my shoulder, plunks an ink pad onto the table, inks the stamp, smacks it down next to the case number in the logbook, and sits down in a huff. It's a little red turkey. Pseudo-seizures are probably the most common form of hysteria seen in a neurology ward. The majority of them occur in patients who have genuine epilepsy. They know what a real seizure should look like and are pretty good at producing fake ones. The siblings of patients with epilepsy, who have seen plenty of real seizures, also account for a significant number of cases. Victor had no previous epileptic history, but we have to admit him to the ICU and take continuous EEG recordings for a day or two just to confirm that nothing shows up on the recordings. Nothing does. Moreover, he wakes up from his long convulsive sessions perfectly lucid, a virtual impossibility after a true epileptic spell. The facts are duly noted in his record for the benefit of the next hospital that has to deal with Victor.
Reaching Down the Rabbit Hole was written by Alan Ropper and Brian Burrell. It was abridged by Pete Nichols and read by Colin Stinton. The producer was Karen Rose, and it's a Sweet Talk production for BBC Radio 4. Now, before the news, there's just time for a brief moan.
The British love to complain, but are we any good at it?
One thing where no one ever complains is in the hairdressers. They say, so how do you like it? And you say, lovely, thank you so much. Give them a huge tip and run home and wear a hat.
Examining the roots and the richness of our propensity to moan.
The archetype of the comic complainer, it exists literally as long as comedy has existed.
The great plaint and sorrow produces the cries of the Bible and the cries of poetry.
The writer Bidisha presents Mustn't Grumble, The Noble British Art of Complaining, on Saturday evening at 8, and then on the BBC Radio 4 website.
In a couple of minutes here on Radio 4, Woman's Hour will be discussing fatherhood in the 20th century and charting the evolution of the family man. We'll also be hearing about the new trends in online dating. And the Hollywood star, Reese Witherspoon, will be talking about her new film. That's all on the way after the news.